Welcome to the conference. Please note today's call is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn it over to Lauren Ritchie. Please go ahead.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome again to now the third follow-up call for the Renal Endorsement Maintenance Steering Committee, where we're going to look at the dialysis adequacy measures today. I'm joined here by Karen Pace here at NQF. And once again, we do have another full agenda with six measures to get through over the next couple of hours. But before we get into the measures, I will just briefly turn it over to Dr. Christine Schonder for any opening remarks.
Thank you. Welcome, everybody, and thank you for joining us again for this third follow-up call here. As Lauren mentioned, we do have a full agenda today to review six measures over the course of the next couple of hours. We will be the process for those of you who have not been on one of the previous calls, we actually have a very streamlined process where Lauren and Karen will introduce the measures for us, really kind of highlighting the specific areas of disagreement or concern rather than focusing on the entire measure throughout. And then as we reach some consensus on the measures, we will start to develop a Lauren, and we'll send out then a survey at the end to for everyone to vote on that afterwards in a more formal manner. If time permits, then we can talk a little bit about the related and competing measures and then open it up for comment afterwards, for public comment. For those of you participating in the call, if you could please put your phone on mute when you're not speaking, that will help to keep down some of the distractions during the call. Thank you, and I'll turn it back over to Lauren.
Okay, thank you. So at this point, I'll just take a really quick poll of the committee members who are on the call. And I think so far we have Alan Kleiger, Christine Schonder, Michael Summers, Peter Crooks, and I know that Roberta Wager is on the call. Are there any other steering committee members that I did not name that are on the call?
And before we get started, if there are any steering committee members or measure developers on the measures today that are somehow in the not in the public line, operator, how would they signal you that they're in the wrong line?
If they're in the wrong line, they could hit star one at this time.
Okay.
Okay, so the way we scheduled these calls were kind of based on the availability of the primary work group members. And at the time this call was scheduled, we really only were aware of one person who would not be on the call, and that was Dr. McMurray. And I see that we are still missing a couple of the primary work group members. So I just want to maybe ask the co-chairs, how do you think we should proceed with missing a couple of our primary work group members? Peter or Christine?
Well, there doesn't seem to be, I suppose one option is to try to reschedule again. I don't know if that would be.
Oh, we just got another. Joe Masana is joining us.
Okay.
Well, that's
pretty helpful. A couple more committee members.
Joe Nally was on yesterday's call. He reviewed some of these measures. I don't know if he was in the primary work group or.
No, not for this group.
And so far we're still missing two: Myra Klein, Peter, and Janet Welsh.
Let me see if I can.
And you, as far as you know, Myra was. She did not decline the meeting, or she accepted the meeting, or?
I did not hear one way or the other, and I believe that Janet Wells said she had a conflict after the fact, so we may just be missing one that may not join.
Is Connie Anderson on our group, too?
No. No, she is not.
So the original work group was Myra Kleinpeter, Alan Kleiger, Michael Summers, Bobby Wager, Janet Welch, and Stephen McMurray.
So we have three of those, right?
Three of them.
Well, I'm open to suggestions. Does anybody else in the committee have any suggestions for what we should do at this point?
I think we should press on.
Yeah, I just realized I was on mute the whole time. I was looking at the measures, and it doesn't look like we have a whole lot of discrepancies through most of these measures. So I would vote for moving on.
I think so, too.
Okay.
I think this body, yes.
Okay, well then we'll move on. So just as a quick reminder, just remember to maximize your screen in the upper right-hand corner to see the documents a little bit better. And what we sent out prior to today's call was just a summary of the work group's preliminary evaluations based on your entries before the in-person meeting. So it's essentially the same information, just in a condensed table format. And as Christine mentioned, we will provide a brief description of the measures, highlighting any areas of issues or concern. And we do have the measure developers on the call. They'll be available to answer any questions you may have. So I think with that, we'll go ahead and get started with the first measure.
Okay, this is Karen, and I'll go through the measures. We'll go through the measures one by one. Before we get into the individual measures,
this is Peter Cooks. I'm sorry, I cut myself off by accident. Did you guys make a decision on how to proceed? I was going to mute, and I hit release. And I new phone.
We decided to press on, Peter.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, so one of the things that we've been doing is looking at generally that the preliminary reviews and based on the measures that were reviewed at the steering committee, there doesn't seem to be any issue about dialysis adequacy being a high impact aspect of healthcare. So we suggest that we kind of dispense with not discussing that for each measure, but want to open up the opportunity for the steering committee to pull out any particular measure where they would like to discuss impact, and then we can do it. But any issue with just picking up with performance gap on these measures and stipulating that they're high impact area?
I would agree with that.
Okay.
I'm good with that. And
I agree.
Okay, so we'll begin with measure 0247. And just to recap, as Lauren put in the memo, we did discuss three hemodialysis measures at the in-person meeting. And 0249, which was the hemodialysis adequacy measure, was voted as suitable for endorsement, as well as 0323, which was the physician level measure. So just to put in context. So these first two measures are also along in the area of hemodialysis. So 0247 is the percentage of all adults greater than or equal to 18 years old hemodialysis patients in the sample for analyses with documented monthly adequacy measures of single pool KT over V or its components in the calendar month. I think it's pretty clear from that what the numerator and denominator are. There's no exclusions. It's a process measure, no risk adjustment. It's a facility level process measure, and it's a measure of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. So if we go on to importance to measure and report, in terms of performance gap, the preliminary reviews rated this either moderate to high, and the developer had submitted some performance data. So I'm going to just stop here at each of the major criteria to see if there are any additional issues about performance gap that anyone wanted to raise.
It remains a performance gap.
Okay. So in the evidence, basically the preliminary reviews seem to indicate that it met the evidence. One of the things that I think that we'll point out is that this would be indirect evidence because this is a measure of simply doing the assessment monthly, which is quite far away from the outcome, and most of the evidence was about the relationship between the dialysis adequacy and the health outcome of mortality. So it's indirect evidence, and it's one of these less than not very proximal to the desired outcome.
Right. So can I just ask the usual question about that, which is that it's a necessary but not sufficient measure, right? I mean, you have to measure it in order to know that you have adequacy. So this talks about evidence that you're actually measuring. And we're asked, if I remember correctly, to consider each measure on its own and then later to talk about harmonization so that if we were to find that, yes, there's a reason to measure, but it's not proximal enough to the outcome, so that later we want to harmonize this with a measure of the actual number, we could do that later. Is that correct?
Yeah, we hadn't really looked at it exactly that way, but you're right that we're supposed to look at each measure on its own, and it is, you know, in terms of it may be something that you want to look at the end, whether, given the fact you have a dialysis adequacy measure, whether this type of measure would be needed in
that
context. So I think that's a reasonable approach.
I was also concerned about that. We have three metrics, one that it's measured, one that it's a certain method is used, and one that it meets a certain number for both hemo and peritoneal dialysis. And it seems that it would be possible to come up with a metric that sort of combines them. In other words, to be in the numerator, you have to qualify for these various things. You know, it has to be measured, the right way, and the number has to hit a certain thing. And so that it would seem it'd be serving the public better and the industry better if we could come up with one instead of three.
But Peter, that was my point. So that if we look at each of these individually as we've been asked to, then we have an opportunity later to see if we can harmonize these into a single, more useful measure.
Right. I agree with the process, or understand the process, and that's what we're about. But I'd like to be able to reserve to be able to talk about that later.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Can I just raise one other quick thing as well? It's the same thing that we've talked about in the face-to-face meetings, and that the developer pointed out in each of these adequacy measures, which is that right now they're describing single pool KT over V, which assumes that everyone being measured has the same frequency of treatment. But these days we're getting much more variation in frequency. And with that variation, a better measure is weekly standard KTV. So that the developer for this and other measures suggested that we need to, you know, it's probably appropriate since most people are on 3 to look at this on its own, but then moving forward with this, perhaps to refine it to a more generalizable measure like weekly KTV, weekly standard KTV.
If they did that, is that something they could do without resubmitting it to the committee?
It may be something that would need an ad hoc review, and I guess the question would be how quickly CMS could explore that. And we can ask the developer that. I know that they responded to the steering committee's recommendation in the prior project and felt that they didn't have enough time or evidence to do that, but maybe we can see what their current thinking about that is.
Should we ask them now?
Yeah, if you'd like.
Sure. Maybe we can ask. We have Dr. Wolf and Dr. Misana on the call, I think.
Right.
Could we open those lines?
They should be on the
operator. If you could open the lines.
Those lines are already open.
So Alan, this is Joe Misana. I'm not sure I understand the question. There were a couple of questions going around. So could someone rephrase the question for me related to standard weekly KT over V?
Well, I can rephrase my
question. what the specific question is.
Yeah. I can rephrase mine. My specific question is, this measure uses single pool KTV as its... Oh, no, this let me go beyond this, because this is a measure that talks about just in general that it's measured, not what a number is. But in each of these measures that have been proposed, the metric we're using is the single pool KTV. And the question is, would it not be more appropriate and thereby encompass many more of the hemodialysis patients to move from this to a weekly standard KTV instead of single pool?
So I'll speak for myself and my understanding of where the literature is at right now, because I don't think I can speak for CMS, and if someone from CMS is on the line, they may want to handle this. But the difficulty what I'm aware of right now is data source for us to do analysis to compare standard KT over V, certainly from the Medicare data set.
All of the elements, you have all the elements you need to calculate a weekly standard KTV.
Okay.
Okay, so then what we'll do is this has definitely been a theme with this steering committee and making this recommendation, so it can be a strong recommendation that that CMS move to that, and we can ask them what the possibility would be for them to work on that.
It sounds like it's not something they're ready to do in the short term. So my question was, if 2 years from now or a year and a half from now they see the light or decide that that's a better metric, could they just do it, or would we have to revisit it?
Yeah, they would. It could be done prior to the scheduled endorsement maintenance, and we would ask them to submit their changes and some analysis to indicate how that changes the performance measure, and then a decision would have to be made whether that needed a more thorough review. It's a little bit more substantial than just, fixing a code in a measure, so it would probably need some kind of ad hoc review process.
Yeah, now, Karen, this is Joe Masana. I'd like to just respond a little bit to Dr. Kleiger. Alan, I think you're right. I think in theory we have all the data elements we need, even from claims, with reported height and weight and frequency of dialysis and single pool,
right,
KT over V.
Right.
But I would hesitate to endorse that we could use those data without validating some of the components, the height and weight in particular, that I've looked at. I think that we've got a couple steps there that we need to pursue to be able to bring a credible measure to you all.
Understood. Thank you.
So at a minimum, this steering committee could recommend that at the time of the next endorsement maintenance, you expect to see a measure using standard KT over V.
Okay, thanks.
Right.
Okay, any other comments about evidence? So, and let me just back up to the question that was about looking at this individually and whether, there's a couple ways that you could look at this evidence and say it's not direct evidence and it's basically expert opinion, and if that was a strong enough reason not to pass it on evidence, the measure would stop there. But I think as we've talked about, as we go through this, the other opportunity will be to look at all these together and make some suggestions regarding harmonization.
Right. I mean, again, this particular measure is a frequency measure.
Right.
And I guess in terms of the evidence, the thing that was a disconnect for me is that the evidence doesn't deal with whether this is the right frequency, or there's evidence that this frequency makes a difference once a month, whether it be, you know, once every 3 months, once every 2 weeks. There's the evidence doesn't specifically address the frequency issue. That is, it seems to me, the point of the measure.
Okay. All right. Any other comments about evidence? All right. And then we can move on to scientific acceptability. Here we had basically one difference of opinion about either insufficient or low rating of the evidence. One of the things I'll point out is that on reliability, you know, for all of their measures, CMS submitted some additional analyses, which was in that developer responses, to give us some better reliability analysis, where they looked at signal-to-noise analysis and the inter-unit reliability. So that's some additional information that you all didn't have at the time you did the initial preliminary evaluation. And
I guess I'm really not sure their initial reliability when they were doing the month-to-month correlation of the facility score. I guess I'm still not clear what exactly that meant, what they were correlating.
Yes, and who is that speaking? I'm sorry.
It's Michael. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, Michael, thanks. I think that was the major question, and that's why we had asked CMS and their developer to explain, and that's when they submitted the additional reliability information. So if you want to ask the developer to explain what they were trying to demonstrate with looking at correlation over time.
Right. So
okay.
I wasn't sure whether they were correlating the specific facility score and how the facility did 1 month to the next month, or, you know, exactly what they were correlating.
So, Joe or Bob?
This is Bob. Can you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
So what we were doing there was not trying to validate, look at the reliability of the individual patient-level measure from different sources of data, but to look at the measure at the facility level to see if we would get the same measure under similar, although not identical, circumstances, in slightly different circumstances. And the month-to-month was one way to look at similar circumstances to see if the measure, or from serial values, to see if the measure would reliably show the same characteristic for a facility. And the correlation suggests that, yes, facilities that have good scores in one time period have good scores in the adjacent time period. Now, while things may have changed, so it's not exactly the same circumstances, we our intent was to try and find a situation which was as close as possible. And this would be like two different reviewers looking at the same patient at nearly the same time to try and evaluate the patient status. Here we're looking at two different measures for the same facility under nearly the same circumstances, and we found good reliability on the score that was reported at the facility level. That was the intent of that analysis.
Karen, in our table of I've seen trying to rank reliability testing as strong, moderate, weak, or not applicable. How would you rate this? Is this a moderate rating of reliability?
Well, I would say the developer's response to our question, I mean, it's a bit of a stretch on what our task force has identified as reliability testing at the level of the data elements versus, I mean, so it's, you know, if that's
might have been weak, but then they've strengthened it with their other information.
Yes. Lauren, can you pull up that table from the developer responses? So, you know, the weakness of that is that it's at the measure score and not at the data element, so you could have lots of unreliability at the data element level, and
and have consistency from month to month so you get the same score.
Right. And then the other issue is, you know, in the context of hopefully performance improvement, do you actually, a month you probably don't expect too much difference, but if you were comparing year to year, you know, and the expectation was for improvement, then what are you actually accomplishing with that? But that was one of the reasons we had asked them to provide their rationale and asked them if they had patient level and facility level data to also provide to you some reliability based on signal to noise, which is what Lauren has pulled up for you. So in this one, I believe the inter-unit reliability for 0.247?
0.94,
which means that the measure score is able to distinguish well among facilities. And our testing task force rating scale says that it's acceptable for a moderate rating to have reliability demonstrated at either the data element level or the measure score. We would consider this at the measure score. What they provided before would be kind of trying to kind of fit something in that isn't exactly what we're looking for, but... So I would say that this meets our criteria for moderate rating for reliability testing at the measure score level.
Great, okay.
Any other comments or difference of opinion about that, in terms of supporting or not supporting either of the methods of testing?
I think this is as good as we're going to get it, and it's signal to noise is beautiful, and I think we should move on.
Right. Okay. So validity then, again, there was one low rating. Basically, on this one, our CMS did looking at the correlation of the quintile scores on this measure, which is the frequency measure, to standardized mortality ratio. That's in 2B2. And there was one preliminary reviewer that thought that it did not meet criteria, and we can talk about that. It's actually the kind of testing we'd like, but the results, I think, the results indicated, for example, quartile 1 with the lowest performance on this frequency measure of 70%, the relative risk for mortality was 1.13, meaning it was 13% higher. Then quintiles 2 and 3 were the same at 1.08, and then quintile 4 was 1.09. So it's not a picture perfect progression, but does indicate that facilities that have lower performance on this measure have higher risk of their standardized mortality ratio. So I'll stop there, see if anyone wanted to comment on that.
Well, Karen, if that was the case, if the data are to be believed, then we could say this is valid because units that measure on a monthly basis as opposed to units that don't have a lower mortality rating. And that's a test of validity. Is that...
Yes.
They're making.
Yes, and Bob, you want to add anything?
No, that's the main message. And
okay.
The one point is that the lowest quintile actually is the one that's really different from the others.
Right.
So it's not a straight progression all the way up and down, but there is the one extreme value which leads to the most extreme outcome. for about 20% of the facilities.
Karen, is there different validity testing that would be more effective, or is this as good as we could ask for or hope for?
This is actually the kind of validity testing that we are interested in. You know, the results are not necessarily as straightforward as we would like, but at least it does show a difference. But that is kind of the main, or one of the primary questions about, you know, these kinds of process measures is, does it tell you anything ultimately about, you know, the quality of care, and certainly correlation with the health outcome, it provides some good evidence of validity as an indicator of quality, you know, that this performance measure is an indicator of quality.
Okay, well, I'm fine with that. Any other questions about...
No, only the note again is that I guess Bob pointed out it really is true only for the lowest quintile,
right,
which is good enough for me, but I think we should just note that that's the case.
Right.
Okay. Okay, and then usability and feasibility did not seem to have any concerns. But I'll stop there and see if anyone wants to raise any questions. Okay. And then the preliminary assessment of criteria being met for to be suitable for endorsement. Again, there was one disagreement there, and so we can, it may have been related to something we've already talked about, but there was actually three yes and two no in the preliminary eval, so we should talk about that a little bit and see, based on our, you know, what the issues are and whether what you're thinking now is.
Well, are either of the two people no's on, Janet or Constance?
Right. Is that who?
Yeah,
that's
those are
on the call.
Okay.
Neither of the no's is on the call?
Yeah, neither of the no's is on the call.
Okay.
Makes it easy for us, guys.
Right. Okay.
I wasn't sure how they, I thought I'd looked back to see, and I didn't see that they passed it on all the other sub-measures, I thought, so I didn't know how they came up with it.
Well, except Constance had low on feasibility, I guess, for C.
Actually, go back. I think there was one no on scientific acceptability.
Yes, that was Janet.
Yeah.
That was Janet. Yeah, so those are the two.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, but nothing else that this group wants to bring up? Okay. All right, so we can move on to 0248. And this is a CMS measure, and this is about the method of measurement of the delivered hemodialysis dose. And the description is it's a percentage of all adult hemodialysis patients in the sample for analyses for whom the delivered hemodialysis dose was calculated using UKM or Dagerdas 2 during the study period and for whom the frequency of hemodialysis per week is specified. There are no exclusions and no risk adjustment. It's not applicable for this measure. So we can move into talking about performance gap, and we had agreement that the measure met either at a moderate or high rating, so I'll just see if there are any additional comments or questions about that.
Let me just make one general comment. John DeGeertis actually is just putting together and putting an abstract in to use the Gerdes 2 for different frequencies of dialysis as well. He has some data that he's showing that show that you can use the Gerdes 2 as long as you can note the pre-dialysis interval, the interval between dialyses, And you can use the same basic calculation for calculating standard KTV so that it's a method that's adaptable not just for this, but in the future if we move toward a more universal measure like standard KTV, we can continue to use it.
Okay. Okay. Any additional comments or any comments about performance gap? Okay.
I mean, since it's virtually the only, it's the only method anyone is using, I'm not sure what we could say about a performance gap.
Right. So that was noted, and we can look at what CMS submitted.
Although there is a comment on the write-up I'm looking at, it says performance gap analysis performed in more than 70%. Half of facilities use Degertis 2 in more than 70% of patients. I guess that doesn't tell us what the gap is. It says a lot are using it, but it doesn't measure the gap per se.
I don't know what else people are using.
Yeah, it wouldn't be wrong to not pass this if there's no performance gap anymore.
Again, in my own sense is I like your idea, Peter, of these are all reasonable things that continue to make sense, and if we can harmonize them all after we've passed them, that makes a whole lot of sense to me.
Okay. And, Peter, I know you were looking in the measure submission form because they didn't give the facility distribution of scores, so I think in the – let's look – probably in their validity testing for the quintiles, it might be there. Let me just look. So in their validity testing in 2B2.3, they have quintiles in performance. Quintile 1, 44%. Quintile 2, 44 to 63%. Quintile 3, 63 to 69%. Quintile 4, 69 to 76%. And quintile 5, 76 to 100%. But I guess the question is if they're not getting that method, does that mean they're just not getting measured, perhaps?
Yeah, that's what I wonder as well.
Well, these results that are being shown on the screen right now, these are of adequacy, right, not of what method was used, or am I wrong about
it? No, this is supposed to be performance on this particular measure.
Yeah, but your point is the right point. That is, it's either they performed this or maybe they did nothing. So it doesn't necessarily reflect on the measure. It's just, binary. Either they did it or they didn't, perhaps.
Right. So Joe or Bob, could you confirm that?
I can't where I'm at. I'm away from the office. But if
but I would think since the denominator has no exclusion and the numerator is if they had measurement using this. I mean, so the option would be the ones that aren't meeting the numerator either weren't measured at all or used something that wasn't acceptable.
Right. That makes sense to me. But I'm going straight from memory right now, and rather than tell you something that I remember but is inaccurate,
okay.
I'd rather get the correct answer to you.
Okay.
Well, that really brings me to the question how the measure is specified, because if this is supposed to be the percentage of patients who were measured in a certain way, that's there's two sides to this. You could, but to go back to the performance gap issue, I feel pretty strongly that if there's no performance gap, we're not doing anybody any service to pass this. And yes, in harmonization, we might ask them to specify in their harmonized final metric that this method be used, but it's not proper to pass it if there's no performance gap. So maybe we should ask the submitters to clarify their data on is it really a performance gap or not.
Right, but I think that, and I assume Joe or Bob could confirm that what they gave us for quintiles of performance would be performance on this measure, right?
I'm 99% sure that that's the case. I just want to check with some of our analysts before I confirm that. But I believe that those quintiles that you're looking at or that you've looked at under the validity were quintiles where UKM or DeGurtis 2 was used, whether there is specificity in the data about other formulae or approaches that were used or missing data, I can't comment on at this point.
Yeah. Remember that the numerator statement really has two requirements. One, that adequacy number be calculated, and the second is that it be calculated using this formula. There are really two parts of it.
Right. And I suspect that it's the absence of the KT over V, but I'd like to confirm that, basically.
Okay.
Then there's a flaw. You know, if the metric is intended to encourage, to say that the national standard that when it's measured, it should be done by this method, then there's a flaw in the metric if it's not giving us that. Do you see my point? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, let me look at the denominator. Yeah, in-center. It just says number of patients receiving in-center hemodialysis or home hemodialysis. Okay. So, all right, so we'll have that discussion, and or we'll note that and ask for a clarification.
Even if they don't change the metric, if they could show us that there's a sizable proportion doing some other method.
Yeah, but you know that won't be the case, Peter.
Well, I guess I'll have to decide, at least for my voting, how to...
Right. You know. So I think that brings up the question of that you all started with, is why do you need three measures? If you can combine the are they testing with how they're testing to the result.
That's right. Exactly right.
Okay. All right. Okay. So, and we'd have the same discussion about evidence. It's indirect evidence. Any other comments about that? Again, we have the same issue about the reliability, and in this case, the reliability, again, the developer submitted that additional reliability testing for the measure score level. And I see that there was one initial low rating on validity. And I think the quintiles of performance is associated with standard mortality ratio are a little less straightforward even than the previous one. So let me just okay. So the validity testing on this, again, you know, gives the quintiles of performance on this measure, which is the method, and then correlated with or associated with standard mortality ratio. And essentially, there was no difference, really, because the relative risk went from 1.06 to 1.12 to 1.07 to 1.05, but they all included 1, which means they were not statistically significant.
Right.
Did they all include 1?
I
thought they were all above 1.
Let me double check. Oh, I'm sorry.
I thought they were all okay.
Right. No, the first one, the first quintile was 1.06, and you're right.
They were
all
fine.
1.02 to 1.09. So the first quintile, there was a small difference. Yeah, the 6% increase in relative risk.
Yeah. So this is a very nice demonstration, actually.
Okay.
And this is Bob Wolf. I wanted to say that what we have generally presented is the validity relative to another outcome. And we have not stated what I think is clear to everybody, that these have a face validity, that these are measuring what they are intended to measure.
Right.
So
And I, yes, And I need to correct myself. None of these actually included one in the range, so that was my mistake on this particular measure. So they were all had increased relative risk, again, above.
But I have to point out that because the metric isn't really measuring, you know, that they're using the proper method, this validity test isn't valid. This shows some correlation between, again, whether modeling is done, but it doesn't show us that the GERDES-2 outperforms other models. You know, we shouldn't read it that way. I
but
don't
again,
think Peter, this tests validity.
No, Peter, but it does. You just have to put this for the measure as it's written, which is that a adequacy measure be done and that it be done using the GERDES-2. The way this is written, and it includes both of those pieces, this does test the validity of that. We believe that it's likely that it's testing the validity of that people get it measured end up having better mortality compared to the people who don't get it measured. But I think we have to pass on it to talk about it as this is constructed, which is a two-part numerator.
I hear what you're saying, you know, but this doesn't add anything really to the last metric then. You know, they're both basically saying that if you measure it, you have a better outcome.
Well, that's why, again, my feeling is that your idea is right, that we should, if it holds together and makes sense, that we should endorse it and then request that these be harmonized into a single measure.
Check.
I think Peter's raising the question, I guess, of whether this measure should move forward is what I guess what you're saying, right, Peter?
Well, you know, I'm prepared to deal with the metric as it is as opposed to what it should be, but
Okay.
The way it's specified doesn't really get to, you know, saying that we have a national standard that the GERDES-2 should be used and we're going to measure on that. It doesn't do that. But we will pass it, you know, we will evaluate it as specified.
Well, that how it's specified is a validity question. It's not, and maybe this validity testing would have looked more dramatic if it was more clarified, but we don't know. As Alan said, this is based on the measure as it's specified.
Right, I understand that.
Okay. Any other comments about scientific acceptability? Lauren's giving me the move on sign. Did we, and any comments about usability and feasibility?
Everybody said hi, looks like. So.
Okay. And then.
I am medium, yeah.
Yeah. And then preliminary assessment of suitability. There was one no in the preliminary, but.
That was Janet.
That was Janet. So any other comments or questions? Okay. All right. Then we'll move on to 0318. And this is, we're going to start with, we have four peritoneal dialysis measures. We'll start with the two that are the actual intermediate clinical outcome about adequacy. This first one, 0318, is CMS's facility level measure, and it's the percentage of all adult peritoneal dialysis patients whose delivered peritoneal dialysis dose was a weekly KT over V urea of at least 1.7. And in parens, it says dialytic plus residual during the four-month study period. The denominator is all adult peritoneal dialysis patients who have been on dialysis for at least 90 days. Other than that, no exclusions. And we can get into the measure now. So we'll pick up with performance gap, and there seemed to be agreement that it was either rated high or moderate on performance gap. Any issues? Let's see if there was any other question. Okay. All right. Well, then let's go on to evidence.
So can I start raising an issue with the evidence? It's just interesting, and
yes.
In several places we've talked about this before. For reasons that are not totally convincing, in peritoneal dialysis, when we measure adequacy, we include endogenous or residual renal function, as is specified in this measure, while for all the hemodialysis measures, we've not done that. We've only measured dialysis by the machine, and we've excluded endogenous kidney function. And there has been some discussion about that in the literature, but I think we need to point out that there is that apparent discrepancy, and I, for one, am unconvinced that there should be a substantial difference in how you look at that for patients on hemo versus those on peritoneal dialysis. I don't know whether the developers would care to say anything about why that is. They develop both measures.
Alan, this is Joe Masana. I wouldn't care to, but as you know, these were from 2007. These were based primarily on the KDOQI guidelines and other international guidelines. And as you know, the PD has traditionally included that. It's a weak answer, but I hear what you're saying. But they were modeled based on the national guidelines that were available.
I mean, didn't we used to believe, and maybe it's still the case, that many hemo patients lose their residual renal function so quickly that it wasn't worth the time and effort to try to measure residual renal function?
Yeah, Peter, the people in the sciences have really questioned that the wisdom of that decision. It turns out that there's a big spread of endogenous kidney function or residual renal function in hemodialysis patients. Some lose it very quickly and others don't these days with the more biocompatible membranes, et cetera. So that the rationale of having that split was never very strong to begin with, but I think it really begs the question now. I guess I only raise that not to put an impediment in the discussions, but only that perpetuating in the year 2011 and up in the next 2 years, if we endorse this, that difference, basic difference in measurement between the two techniques, really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Alan, this is Joe Masana. I would only comment, although I agree with you, the hard evidence is lacking that clearly defines the difference between hemodialysis and peritoneal dialysis effects or the spread of residual renal function in prevalent patients. There is the observational literature looking at hemo versus peritoneal dialysis and survival indirectly questions what differences or whether there are differences based on differential mortality in early versus later periods after initiation of dialysis, which some people have attributed potentially to residual kidney function, but it's indirect and very soft.
Yeah. We shouldn't get stuck on this, and I wouldn't make this a reason not to endorse the measure, but we have to point out the inconsistency and perhaps a message back to developers that in the next round they consider having a more uniform way of doing this.
Good.
Okay. Anything else about evidence? Okay.
Well, did they resubmitted more data on reliability as in the...
I believe so, and... ...0318, did they provide... is it on that table? Oh, we're looking. Let me just see. Yes, it's there. 0318. That's the measure we're on, correct? The intra-unit reliability was 0.57. So lower than what we were seeing for the assessment measures. Do you see it? No, on that table you were on. It's first page of that table. Oh. 0318, you see it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I don't know if Joe or Bob want to comment of what you think's going on with the difference. 0.57.
The p-value is still very low. I don't know why that is.
If you have a large enough
large sample.
Yeah. Okay.
But also, I guess, and Bob, I'd be interested in your thought about this to help me think about the inter-unit reliability number. The hemodialysis has lots of patients in each facility, while the PD numbers are very small per facility. Would that make a difference here?
I believe that's precisely it. This is a sample size per facility phenomenon, I believe, is the major thing that's going on here. But we still do have the ability to identify differences between facilities.
Yeah.
And it looks like, and I think this was in all of your submissions for peritoneal dialysis information, you say that the mean number of patients per facility was 84.
That's hemo. That's not peritoneal.
So I guess that's a question that I had when I was reading this, because when we asked for the data, where the data came from on the performance gap, they say 3,436 facilities and a total of 293,694 patients.
No, that's all hemo and PD together.
So we don't really know what the numbers have been for any of this PD data, that for any of these measures, or we haven't gotten to the rest of the measures, but I guess we need to get that clarified.
We will get that information. I believe it's about 9% of that number is the latest thing I recall.
It's about 6% total. Yeah.
Okay. So that certainly will affect the inter-unit reliability. You're right.
That's what I thought it likely is.
And then on validity, which I think is probably also related to sample size now that we've talked about it, but if we look at, again, their analysis in 2B2 and...
include one. I mean, there's... none.
Pardon me? Go ahead.
They all include one.
Yes, this is the one. I'm sorry, I misspoke earlier. This is the one where ranges for the relative risk include one. So, and you see the spread, quintile one is 0%, two is 1 to 3, so it's...
Well, if they really did use just PD, which is what I hope that they did, rather than the whole sample, I'm certain, again, Bob, you can tell me, but I'm certain
that
this is
correct.
Because there are such few patients in each facility that you have very wide confidence intervals here.
Alan, this is Joe Masson. I was asked to review these data prior to the submission of additional validation data, and we were only looking at the PD patients here, and that limited our abilities to identify statistically significant differences.
Yeah.
All right. Any other questions or comments about reliability or validity for the PD adequacy measure, the facility level measure?
Just to help me interpret the last discussion, then, are we concluding that reliability is meeting standard and validity also?
I wasn't sure. I mean, I originally had said it didn't based on that testing, because I thought we were supposed to assess it based on the data we were provided. I mean, everyone else who originally reviewed it had polar opposite opinions to me.
Right. Well, I think you were you're correct when you look at the data submitted, and the inter-unit reliability of 0.57 is not that great, but I think the other thing is to look at it in the context of what Alan was pointing out of the small sample sizes and what we can really expect with that. So it is an interesting question of, how to, and I don't think there's any right or wrong answer here. And I'll leave that open for the rest of the committee to give your thoughts about it, given these numbers, the quantitative analysis, which is the kind of analysis we want. We also would prefer that the analysis clearly show reliability and validity. But I think you also have to take into consideration the context and the sample size. So,
well, doesn't this sort of imply that if I'm a small PD unit and I get this metric measured and I get a value back, I will have, they say, well, you're compliant, you're at 67%, but it could be anywhere from 20 to 80. Doesn't that sort of mean that the confidence interval around any measurement is going to be quite wide?
Well, I guess my opinion was that I don't want to get schnookered by the small numbers. It means that we're unable to do the kind of validity testing you'd really want to do. But if we believe that there is a relationship between individual patients' measured adequacy and outcomes, independent of this analysis, I guess I went outside of this analysis.
Yeah.
I felt that it surely was a valid measure. That's the way I thought about it.
Could I add something as well? This is Bob Wolf.
Yes, Bob.
Sure. The small sample size means that the confidence intervals will be right wide. So, Peter, you're exactly right. But in terms of identifying facilities that have a persistent problem, to the extent that a facility has a persistent problem, then sooner or later their data will be bad enough that it will show that it will flag. And with repeated measuring, we will at least be able to identify persistent problems with repeated measuring. We will have a substantial false negative rate. That is, we will be missing facilities that might have problems. But with repeated measuring, we will be able to identify them. So there is value to this, even though it's far from a perfect measure.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
Okay. Any other questions or comments about 0318? It looks like under usability and feasibility, the preliminary valves were either high or moderate, and no big concerns, but anything that anyone wants to raise? Okay. And in the suitable, there was one no originally, and that was Michael?
That was me for
right.
The reasons we just discussed, and I think that, I didn't understand that I could bring in some of the other points that have been brought into this discussion and making my conclusion.
Well, I appreciate you kind of doing it by the numbers initially, because it helps, us really air these kinds of trade-offs that need to be considered. So it's always valuable to have that for us to look at. Okay. All right, so let's go to 0321, which is the clinician or physician level measure for peritoneal dialysis adequacy. And this is the percentage of patients age 18 and older with a diagnosis of ESRD receiving peritoneal dialysis who have a total KT over V equal to 1.7 per week, measured once every 4 months.
Yeah, just for clarity, that I presume I didn't go back and look at the original submission, but that should be equal to or greater than.
Okay.
And
please.
Right. Thank you.
I presume that's the way they submitted it. If they did it this way, then we should send it back to them for editing and rethinking. So anyway, go ahead.
Okay. Good point. Okay. So Let's see, exclusions, they have their kind of general exclusions of documentation of a medical reason for a patient not having the KTOV greater than or equal to 1.7 per week, and then they give an example, such as patient has residual kidney function or other medical reasons. And we can look at when we get to reliability, we can look at those specifications in detail if that's something you want to look at.
Well, it has to be, because either they define it the way we talked about it in the last measure, which includes endogenous kidney function. I'm not sure, because it doesn't specify it here. Or if it doesn't include it, then you'd need a much more precise definition of who wouldn't have it measured. What would the endogenous kidney function be that would make it permissible to exclude patients from measuring KTV?
Okay. So this would be, depending on, the outcome of your assessment of this measure, that would be definitely a harmonization issue as well, could be explored as well. But I hear what your comment was. It either needs to be part of the measure as it was in the previous measure, or more clearly specified what the exclusion would be.
I have a primary problem, even going on from here, I must say. I was one of the reviewers, but maybe feels a little different to me now, that unless that's clarified, it's hard to make a judgment at all. It's hard to go on, because the definition is so imprecise that it's hard to know how to interpret it. Either it does, either the numerator statement does or does not include endogenous kidney function.
Okay. So
can we open up the original submission, or the more complete submission, and look at their specifications?
Yes. So we'll go to the specifications for the numerator, and I believe we have someone on the line from the measure steward.
Yes, this is Deidre, and I have Catherine Ost also on the line for the AMA.
Okay. So Lauren has pulled that up, and let's see. We'll read what you have. Numerator statement was repeated, and again, it should be greater than or equal to. I think that's the problem with using symbols in our system. But no details except the EHR specifications, which we haven't looked at. I don't know if any of the reviewers got into the details of the EHR specifations.
Can we ask the developer if this numerator specifies it includes or does not include endogenous kidney function?
This is the AMA. We have included residual renal function as an exception.
So that the numerator statement does not include endogenous kidney function, is that correct?
Just to clarify, that would only be a valid exception if the numerator is not met. So you would first actually look to see whether or not the KT over V is greater than or equal to 1.7. And if it is not met, that could be an appropriate reason as to why it's not met.
The calculation of KTV is inclusive or not inclusive of endogenous kidney function? That's my question.
I would say it is inclusive, because we have not specifically defined it to exclude it.
But it's inconsistent to say it's included, and then you're also putting it in as an exception. So I take it to mean that this hasn't been thought through adequately, and that the word total KTOV does not imply residual renal function.
The way the metric is laid out to be calculated is consistent with the PCPI methodology on how to calculate exceptions. We'd be happy to provide additional documentation on that, but we did not specifically exclude that as a reason, prior to the calculation of the measure.
Yeah, and that would make sense to me, but the clarity is that if the numerator includes both dialysis and residual renal function in the calculation of KTB, if that is the case, as in the facility level measure that we talked about before, if that is the case, and in the AMA measure, you then go further to say if it's not measured, a reason for excluding it is some degree of residual kidney function. If that's the way you've laid it out, then is there any specification of how much residual kidney function would allow you to not measure the KTV?
So we have not provided that level of specificity in the specification. We would be happy to consult with our clinical experts to provide that guidance.
Okay. I just think that that's a problem in defining the measure, but we can move on. But I surely would assure that we have that specification before we would consider endorsing it.
But, and in the interest of harmonization, if it was endorsed, I think in the harmonization effort is quite clear, we would ask them to specify in the numerator that it includes residual kidney function just as CMS measures does.
And the PCPI people, the way this is currently specified, though, it would be each physician deciding what level of kidney function would qualify as an exception.
That's my problem.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well,
apply to other medical reasons.
Right.
That's so nebulous.
Yeah, that's also very nebulous, too. I have, and that isn't present in the facility level metric, and that's an out for, you know, every patient has multiple medical conditions in our population.
The AMA, we got disconnected there. We apologize for that.
Oh, okay.
So we're saying, if you didn't hear it, that the specifications, as nonspecific as they are for the exclusions, makes this a hard measure to evaluate, because it looks like an individual physician can exclude from measurement patients for whatever their own personal judgment is about how much endogenous kidney function or any other medical condition without any specifics to that. Okay.
So any physician that's paying attention could score 100% every 4 months or however often it's done.
So how do you recommend going forward? Do you want to get a response, or do you want to talk about any of the other data? I guess the question would be that the data on performance and the testing would be on the measure as specified, but we can move. Should we go ahead and at least look at that, or how do you want to proceed, steering committee?
Well, Peter, you're the chair. What do you think?
Well, I'm sort of thinking that if we go through and reject the measure for this or other causes, then we don't have a chance to harmonize. And whereas if they came back in a very quick turnaround time with the numerator harmonized with the CMS one and said this is basically the same metric, but this is at the clinician level and other levels outside of the facility, that it would be more tenable to the committee.
So if I may, not only that, it does mean clarifying that numerator, but what I'm hearing from the developers is that their understanding is that it is indeed harmonized already, that numerator is. The numerator includes endogenous kidney function, they believe. But I'm more concerned about the exclusions that are nonspecific and make it very hard to consider this measure.
Well, both. But how can you have endogenous renal function in the total KT over V and then also use it for an exclusion?
Well, the way they're saying it is that for those people who don't have it measured, a reason for not having it measured, and the measure includes endogenous function, but if it's not measured, a reasonable exclusion is if there is some level of endogenous kidney function.
Right, which I don't buy as reasonable.
This is the measure developer. If we could just add one thing. It's not whether or not the value is measured, but it's whether or not it is above that range of 1.5.
Right, correct.
Right.
We understand that.
So total KT over B does not necessarily imply that it includes residual.
That's what I'm asking, I guess.
Okay.
That was my question. And I hear from the developers a probable yes to that it does.
But Alan, if they're saying that, okay, their total KT over V was measured, but it was less than 1.7, say it's 1.4, that includes residual renal function, then how can you exclude it because they have residual renal function? It's already included in the number. You can't have it both ways.
Yeah, I agree. I guess, Peter, what I'm saying is because they're not specific about what level of endogenous kidney function, they could be saying that there's a half of a cc per minute of endogenous kidney function, which would be a KTV of, 1.2, and that would be a reason for excluding it. Well, I think that's wrong.
Right.
You follow what I'm saying? So it is consistent. The measure that they present in their argument is consistent. It's just there's not enough specificity in that exclusion to make any sense.
Yeah, and it calls into question the whole validity or, I guess validity of this as a metric, especially if it's endorsed by NQF. So, Karen, is it reasonable to ask them to clarify the language surrounding these particular issues and with a quick turnaround time? Or
see, here's the problem is they're not going to be able to turn out quickly because they're going to need to specify what level of endogenous kidney function would be an exclusion. But the testing that they've done all is nonspecific. It's their, whatever people said.
I'm quickly looking to see if they gave us any analysis of their exceptions. Under testing, let me just look. Exclusions 2B3. And then it's actually under 2B3, it says at the time of testing, this measure did not have exclusions, or in their terminology, exceptions, which, as they stated, what they do is only look for exceptions or exclusions if the denominator condition was not met.
If we could just clarify, when this measure was originally endorsed, it included a plan of care component, and that's why the measure at that time did not have any exceptions. We have updated the measure to be the pure intermediate outcome of the KT over V level, which is why now there are some examples with the exceptions. We would be happy to our clinical experts to define the residual renal function and provide that back to you. If that helps the discussion, we would certainly appreciate that opportunity.
Yeah, this was originally passed, but not by the renal steering committee, yes. Right, Karen?
No, this one was, but it was that kind of crazy. It was a combination of the intermediate clinical outcome, or if patients didn't meet that outcome, then that they had a plan of care. So what they've done is they've dropped that plan of care and made it more a straight intermediate clinical outcome,
right,
which I think is a good, it's more consistent with the CMS measure and is less confusing of what it means to have a plan of care, but I think what you're pointing out is there's some ambiguity about the potential exceptions.
Right. It could be gamed by the physician who's being measured very easily, so they can always have 100%.
I guess my advice would be, rather than to have us vote on this as it now stands, it would be wiser to ask the developer to take it back, to have a look at the comparable facility level measure that Keck developed, and to come back with a more precise measure for us to review.
Okay, we'll get back to the measure developer and then let you all know.
Do others agree with that? Should we do that? Or, yes.
Yes.
Yes, I do too.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll move on to the next one, Ben, which is, Lauren, help me.
0253.
0253.
Peritonal dialysis adequacy measurement of total solute clearance at regular intervals.
Okay, so this, we're getting back to CMS facility measures, and these are comparable to the ones we talked about at the beginning about the hemodialysis. So one, this first one is about the frequency of measuring, and then the next one will be about the method of measurement. So this is percentage of all adults greater than or equal to 18 years old, peritoneal dialysis patients with total solute clearance for urea, and again in parens, endogenous residual renal urea clearance plus dialytic, measured at least once in a four-month time period. No exclusions. Let's see. Denominator, all adults on peritoneal dialysis. It's process measure, CMS. And we can move on to talking about performance gap. So there didn't seem to be any issue with the preliminary valves, all rated high. Any question or concern? Then we'll go on to evidence, and here we had one concern. Again, this will be the same issue we talked about previously. This would be indirect evidence. It's primarily about the relationship between the adequacy and mortality, I believe. And so I think some of the same issues you discussed for the corresponding HD measures apply here, but I'll stop there and see what the concerns about evidence might be.
Well, again, I kind of peripheral, but as I wrote in my comment here, you know, KTV urea is currently the sort of standard measure of dialysis adequacy, and it is no longer sort of the king of the hill as the only measure. Other measures of adequacy, including volume measures, time, KT alone without V, et cetera, those are all being considered. So when you look at the evidence all has to do with this one particular measure. And it's reasonable, again, we're passing on this particular measure, but I would just want to remind everybody that, you know, maybe too much of our focus has been on the urea kinetics. And it doesn't change our view of this, but that's the only comment I'd make about the evidence.
Okay. All right, so let me just ask if you have kind of the same approach or think it also applies as you were talking about the hemodialysis measures about if you think these should go forward, that during harmonization you may want to have a discussion about whether, you know, they should all be in some way in one measure with the adequacy.
Yes, indeed. I agree with you.
Okay. So we can move on then and talk about reliability and validity and the developer also, I think this one is also in the developer response with additional reliability information on this measure, 0253. The inter-unit reliability was 0.78. Okay. So I think that, and I'll see if that was the issue about the reliability testing. Initially, there was a question, I think, about the correlation over time periods. And then validity, I believe they did the same analysis of looking at performance on this process measure to the standardized mortality ratio.
Yes, they did.
Okay, and how did that come out?
Small and mostly statistically non-significant differences.
Okay.
Almost surely for the same reason we talked about before.
Okay. All right. Any further discussion? Any questions, concerns? Okay. Usability and feasibility on the preliminary valves were rated mostly high, some moderate. Any additional comments or questions? Okay. And then overall suitability, there was one concern probably related to the reliability and validity issues. So any other comments or questions that we should discuss with the group? Okay. So then we can move on to 0254. This is about the method of calculating the weekly KT over V urea. It's the percentage of all adults greater or equal to 18 years peritoneal dialysis patients with a weekly KT over V urea, including endogenous and dialytic, calculated in a standard way. And the numerator is, so this would be, I guess, the definition of a standard way. It includes both the endogenous renal urea clearance and then residual function, unless negligible, which was defined as less than 100 milliliters of urine in 24 hours, assessed by measuring the renal component of KT over V urea and estimating the patient's glomerular filtration rate.
Very good.
By calculating the mean of urea and creatinine clearance. And then the third component is total body water, or the volume, the V, estimated by either the Watson or Hume method using actual body weight, and BSA estimated by either the Dubois method. That must be wrong. The Gahan and Jard. Oh, Dubois, I guess two Dubois.
Yeah, right.
Okay. The Gahan and Jarge method or the Haycock method of using actual body weight during the four-month study period. So that's quite complex, but I assume that – does that meet the standards for –
Yeah, the answer is yeah. These are the sort of well-defined – this is very nicely defined, in fact, a precisely defined way in which is where we do it.
Our AMA submitter should take a look at this metric. In terms of specifying total solute or total KTV urea.
Okay.
Because in the end, we want all these metrics to harmonize and to be using the same numerators, basically.
Okay. All right. So we can skip down to performance gap. Doesn't look like there was any issue in the preliminary reviews. I think we will get a clarification from the measure developer about all the data on the peritoneal dialysis because it looks like they cited those same numbers,
right?
Which is all patients, as
right. And also the discussion here is similar to the one we had for hemo. Which is that the measurement has two parts. One, you have to do it, and the second, you have to do it in a standard way. And so there are 66% of PD, they're finding that 66% of PD patients are not fulfilling this requirement. It's likely that they're not having any measurement, not that they're measuring it in a way different than is in this method.
Okay.
So, similar discussion
right.
to the other
okay.
one.
Okay, right. So we'll kind of pull in that discussion for both. Okay. Any other comments about that? Okay. Evidence, it doesn't look like there were any concerns about the evidence. And we'll just point out, as we've talked about before, just that this is indirect evidence, or perhaps this is more direct evidence, but again, it's about the method versus the actual value.
I mean, that, of course, is that dichotomy. Their evidence doesn't deal with the fact that this is the best method. Their rationale had to do with the value of measuring solute clearance.
Okay. And there is evidence that this is the best method?
Well, I guess that this is silent on that question. I don't see evidence for that.
Right. Okay. Any other comments or questions about the evidence?
Well, the metric is actually, as you pointed out, Alan, the combination of did you do it and then did you do this method. So, I mean, I guess there's evidence that it's good that you do it, at least indirectly. But, you know, it does bother me that there's really no evidence that there are specific methods that they're specifying are better than other methods. And you know, however it's written, that's sort of the way this will be taken, is that things should be done by this method. But I think maybe under harmonization we can deal with this, and you know, if not this round, at least ultimately promote, you know, one metric that would cover all these bases.
Okay. All right. So let's move on to reliability and validity. And again, the developer's response to the initial questions included some additional reliability on the signal-to-noise analysis, and the inter-unit reliability for 0254 was 0.64. And they did the same type of analysis for validity.
It's similar to what we found with all the other PD ones.
Yeah.
Right. Some of the quintiles included one in the confidence interval, which is probably, again, the small case volume issue. So, any comments, questions about reliability and validity?
Just the same discussion we had before. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, nothing new.
Okay. All right. Usability and feasibility seem to preliminary results rated high and moderate. Any additional comments or questions? Okay. And then on preliminary assessment of suitable for endorsement, there was one no, and that was related to the reliability and validity issues, which were reasonable questions. So we'll see how this shakes out. I think you've had pretty good discussion about that, but are there any other issues that should be brought up about suitability for endorsement? Okay. Warren, what's next?
What do you want to talk about? Should we just table the harmonization?
Right. We realized we missed sending you a couple of the measure specs in the related and competing measures table, but I think given the discussion today, we need to get some clarifications before you're ready to think about harmonization. But are there any other comments about harmonization or competing measures that you want to highlight so that we can note them for when we do get to that?
Well, I guess you looked at two issues. One is that if a metric is being submitted by AMA that is, you know, very similar, but looking at a different reporting level that it match as close as possible the way CMS has specified it. And secondly, that we want to look at reducing the hemodialysis metrics, facility level metrics from 3 to 1, and the same for peritoneal dialysis from 3 to 1 if that's possible. I think that it is possible, and that it would be more understandable and useful for public reporting to get it down to one number that represents that the patients are being measured and meeting targets. So as I see it, there's two different.
Right. Okay. And other committee members in agreement? Any other thing to add to that, or other side of that coin? Okay. All right. Good. That's what I heard during your discussion, so that helps. Okay.
So, Karen, does this mean that every metric has now been looked at least by the committee in detail? We made it through all 34?
Yes.
All except one, which we're still trying to decide on. That's the quality of life measure. So
I was going to give ourselves a pat on the back, but
right. No, and you guys, you all looked at that briefly at the meeting and discussed it. It's just whether they're going to be able to submit information for you to actually evaluate it. And I think there's a couple other measures that we need to get some responses back to you all to see if you want to go any further. But I would say essentially the answer is yes. You've looked at all 34 measures, and now we have all the follow-up to do. So.
Can I just clarify where are you going to put 0321? How are we going to handle 0321?
Okay. Let me just get my notes here.
That's the one.
Right.
Yeah.
So my understanding is that we want to ask the developer for clarification about the endogenous kidney function in the numerator, and then also about having precise specifications about it in the exceptions, the residual kidney function, as well as the other medical reasons.
Okay.
And the suggestion is for them to take a look at the CMS measures about potential ways to define those.
Particularly 254.
Okay.
So we will defer further consideration of that measure until resubmission. Is that what I understand?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Is that...
Yeah, that's what I was
that's our preference.
Listening for, but yes.
Okay. All right.
And we're only going to vote on, after the call, 748, 318,
all of them except that. Right. So after this, go ahead.
Yeah, so after the call, just as we've done with the last two work groups, you'll be getting a link from me shortly, another SurveyMonkey link, to submit your votes again based on just today's discussion on the measures, all except 0321 that we just talked about. And then we'll have to send a subsequent survey after we get more information from the developer on that.
Okay.
Great.
So I think it's time for our member and public comments period. So, operator, if you can please open all of the lines.
Absolutely. Those lines are now open.
Okay. Is there any public comments or comments from the NQF members on the line?
Or any comments from the developers?
Okay. Hearing none, I take that as a...
Okay. And from the steering committee members, any suggestions or to us as staff on moving forward with these and next steps or any other suggestions are welcome.
And then also as a quick reminder, we still have two more calls left, and hopefully that's it. We did identify an opportunity to discuss some harmonization issues with the anemia and cardiovascular measures. So that call will be October 4th. I'm blanking on the time. I believe it's
3:30 to 5:30.
Thank you, Christine. And then our final call on October 13th, I believe that is 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern. So
yes.
Two more calls, and I'll send out reminders for those as well.
So I guess we could have a brief discussion or see if you have any what our thinking is that, you know, we will get all of these work group final discussions and ratings. Need to go back to the full committee to make a final judgment on these measures. We were thinking that one way to do that as efficiently as possible is to get that information back to you and then have the steering committee vote online, and then we would discuss the results of that voting on that last call, because, again, that's 2 hours, and, you know, we would have a hard time getting through all these measures, these final measures. There was one suggestion made that when we do that with the full steering committee, to do it by topic area. If you have some other suggestions or totally new suggestions of how, you know, we should consider proceeding with the full committee once these work group calls are done, we'd be glad to hear those.
So I'm sorry, just help clarify for me. Your idea would be to send out the preliminary work group ratings and comments to everyone and ask everyone to vote and then discuss it afterwards?
Yes.
By topic area.
Yeah.
You know, and I would think also that should include your summary of today's call. You know, the summaries you've written up of the, at least I saw the one from the first call, was succinct. It really touched on the key issues that we spent time on and summarized them very nicely.
Right. Yeah. Yes. It would definitely have to be with a summary of the work group discussion and their voting. Now, if that, yeah, I mean, the other option would be to have the call and have discussion followed by voting. We'd have to figure out how to really make the discussion kind of laser in on any issues, and I'm not, so, you know.
Well, here would be my only thought or suggestion. I like your idea. It's a good idea. I wonder if there is a subset of measures for which, after all of these processes are done, there is still substantial disagreement in the work group.
Mm-hmm.
And if those might somehow be culled out and people be treated to an in-person discussion, focused but, you know, clear,
right,
before they actually voted. So,
okay.
I mean, of all the measures, I don't know, how many did we look at? How many are we going to be voting on? It's going to probably be something like 20 of them?
I think about 17.
Yeah,
yeah,
17. I mean, if you know, 13 of the 17, you know, it's either unanimous or one person didn't agree in general to the assessment, to take the remaining two or three and ask people not to vote on those,
sure, until
over the line, until we have some discussion about those.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I guess we could meet, Christine and I and Karen and Lauren. Lauren and Karen, right, and maybe step through the 17, 18 measures and see if any would, we think, really qualify as still quite controversial and needing discussion, and how many of those there are.
There may be none, which would be easy, or there may be 12, which would be impossible.
Right.
But I would, I think that your idea of looking at it that way might be smart.
Yeah.
I do like the idea of for the majority, at least, of the metrics to have people vote online. I think that you'll get a more thoughtful process. People have to pull out the materials and read it in their voting, whereas if you're kind of doing it in a two-hour meeting, a member could come kind of unprepared, just kind of go with the flow and not give it their best effort. So I do think it's worthwhile to have people thinking about it offline, reviewing what these subcommittees have gone through.
Okay.
I agree, and I think I would kind of outline that in the instructions to the steering committee as well, especially for those members who aren't part of any of the work groups.
Sure. Okay. All right. Well, you know, if you think of anything else, feel free to send an email to Lauren and myself, and we'll continue on. We'll be getting out the summaries from these two calls as quickly as possible, but Lauren will send you the voting tool while it's fresh in your mind, and we'll follow up with the summary, and we'll proceed. We appreciate all the time and effort of going through these measures and the time and effort of everyone on the call. Lauren, anything else?
That's it. Thanks again, everyone.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Bye.